I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Dr. Tyra Lindsay Warren. Dr. Tyra is a clinical assistant professor of marketing at Baylor. In this interview, she explains her work bringing the International Faith and Family Film Festival to Waco, why she makes her students take a 48-hour social media break as part of her curriculum, and how we can all build critical literacy into the ways we consume the news. But first, it's the word on the street. The word on the street this month is Eastside. Andreas Alumis is one of the founders and operators of the Eastside Market that took place just last weekend at Brotherwell Brewing. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
How did this idea for the Eastside Market come about? And explain to our listeners what they might see if they attended an Eastside Market.
Yeah. Well, the whole concept on the Eastside Market really came from being an entrepreneur here in Waco, being a young creative, and also just networking with others that were doing the same thing I was. So backstory on me, I have a coffee company, Thirst Coffee, and been a vendor at the farmer's market and just pop-up events. And just having collaborations and partnerships with other people doing the same thing, we were like, we just wanted something that was similar to something that was happening in Houston, which is the Houston Hip Hop Vintage Market. One of the other founders, Eric Leonardis, he is the one who kind of ignited that. He would always go to Houston, check that out. He'd send me pictures and I'd, you know, I'm sitting here in Waco and I'm like, why isn't this happening here?
It
like
looks
we
so
have
fun.
The space, we have the creativity and the people that want to do these things. But it just wasn't existing. I mean, we have markets and everything like that, but it's just a different feel. So the idea stemmed from that. And me and Eric sat together one day in Pinewood and just really started saying, like, how can we make this happen? How can we start just, you know, and it really just started with a name. And it was like, what would we call it? And we had, I think we came up with 3 or 4 names. Then we brought it down to 2. And then in Pinewood that day, we did a poll and went around and just asked people what sounded good. And Eastside
Market. What were the top 2?
I can't remember. It was Eastside Market or I have to ask Eric. I really can't remember that. I liked Eastside Market and I was like, this is where it is. And Eric had a different name. So we had those 2.
Eastside's a better name anyway. So what is it about the Elm Avenue corridor, about East Waco, that made you guys want to not only name the event this, mm-hmm. but host it there?
Again, with my coffee business, I had already been looking at Elm. Downtown is pretty developed, and it was just finding a space. It was really just like, where can we do this? Who would have the ability to give us access to a space that we can pretty much control in, like, the atmosphere, you know? And, I mean, we're young guys. We don't have a lot of money, so we can't pay a bunch of, you know, for space. So we were just thinking about it. We had been already talking to Brotherwell, the people from Brotherwell, and we were like, dude, they're cool people. Let's just see what that opportunity can be. We went up to them, asked them, and they were 100% for it. They said, if you guys can do it, obviously be respectful of the space and everything like that. And we also have to keep in mind that they're running a business as well. But the idea and the goal was always to be in community and create community, and I think that they saw that.
Y'all started the first Eastside Market about a year ago, and there was a hiatus during COVID, and you just reopened.
Mm-hmm.
How was this new and improved COVID version of Eastside Market an improvement over what you had done in the past, and how can people find out about the next Eastside Market?
Yeah. Eastside Market has been going on for about a year now, and really before COVID, was that March that it really like
yeah
took
that's
effect?
When it felt scary to me at least
yeah we had to shut down, and it was kind of depressing, and it was a little not depressing, I would just say it was, what's the right word? Defeating, because I felt like we were going in the right direction. We were going in a good direction. We were growing. We were building. And that Eastside Market that we had to cancel because of COVID was going to be really cool. We had bands coming in. It was kind of lined up with South by Southwest.
Yeah,
so
that's
we were kind of planning around that. And for me, that was the, like, it was bringing in the vision. of what we saw in Austin and in Houston and all that other stuff. So fast forward to COVID, past COVID, and I mean, we're still in it, but we realized it was the year mark coming up, and we're like, we just have to do it. It's not being done. We don't know when this is going to take effect or anything like that. So we really just wanted to bring it out and show people that we have hope.
And you have carried on that momentum with tremendous effort. So this Eastside Market was incredible last weekend. We'll be looking on Instagram and Facebook for more info about Eastside Market. Andreas Zalumis is one of the founders and operators of the Eastside Market. Thank you for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm now joined in studio by Dr. Tyra Lindsay Warren. Dr. Tyra is a clinical assistant professor of marketing at Baylor University. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Austin. Wonderful being here.
Doctor, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your history with Waco?
Sure. My history is not that long with Waco. I've been here for about 3 years. It's actually 3 years this month. Came here by way of New York City. I was working as a marketing executive for the likes of the United States Tennis Association. Woohoo! The U.S. Open starts this week.
I'm so excited about it.
Me too. Then PR director for Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, one of the preeminent modern dance companies in the world. Oversaw all of communications for Uniworld Group, which is a WPP advertising agency based in Brooklyn, New York, with offices in Michigan and Atlanta. And it's known as one of the longest standing multicultural advertising agencies in the United States. And after that, I started this crazy thing called a PhD degree in 2012. And by 2016, I was being interviewed by Baylor University to come teach. And they offered me a job. And, you know, 3 years ago, fall of 2017, I was here starting my Baylor career.
What was attractive to you about the program at Baylor, and what exactly were they hiring you to do?
They were hiring me for this position that I have, clinical assistant professor of marketing. My PhD is in marketing from Rutgers University in New Jersey, and I'm a consumer behavior scholar, published. And what attracted me, first of all, the people. Dr. Chris Pullig, who's the chair of the marketing department, Dr. Terry Manis, who is the dean of the business school, and all of the colleagues who interviewed me like no one's business. I don't know if you're familiar with the Baylor interview process, but it is rigorous, I will say.
Wow.
Unlike many other interviews that I had at the time, it was very rigorous, but learned a lot. Very thorough, because I was interviewed by everyone in the marketing department. So I got to meet, you know, the more veteran faculty members, as well as the young Turks, if you will. And I liked the spirit, you know, of everyone who interviewed me. I liked that they wanted to get to know me. They flew my husband and me in from New York City. So, you know, at times the guys took my husband Sydney away, you know, so they could do guy things. I'd never had that type of engagement before, you know, not even in my corporate career, in terms of interviews and people getting to know me. So that was a huge plus. The campus itself is just flat out gorgeous. Brand new business school. I was coming from two brand new business school buildings at Rutgers University, from the Newark campus to the New Brunswick campus. So all I knew, Austin, was new. state-of-the-art business schools. I love that.
Had you been working in academia, or you had always been private sector? Went
always
to go get that PhD
sector.
And then you decided to go to academia?
Yeah, always private sector. Even in my doc program, I still consulted for Verizon, BET, some other folks. You know, they'd call and want my contributions. But yeah, this was the first, you know, yeah, this was my first official academic position. And, you know, while I was at Ailey and maybe the USTA, I did some adjunct work at Baruch in New York City in their marketing department, specifically in the MBA department. But yeah, this was my first full-time academic position, if you will.
I would imagine that tracking customer sentiment is looking pretty different now than from it was 9 months ago before COVID. Like consumer behavior and the way that people are interacting with their home or with their social spheres. It's been largely upended in the last 6 to 9 months. Would that be correct? Or are people just same folks regardless of COVID or not?
No, definitely upended. And I think it's about brands being able to know their audiences. You know, as you should, brands should know your audience like, you know, the back of their hand, like family members, if you will, in terms of understanding nuances and characteristics. However, being sensitive to their customers' needs at this time is what brands really have to do better. And I think, you know, they are, you know, there are some doing it better than others. But if you're not emotionally connected to your customers, especially now, you will lose them. I'll give you a wonderful example. I don't know if anybody from Saks Fifth Avenue is listening to this, but I shop at Saks Fifth Avenue. Granted, we don't have one here in Waco, but in my travels, you know, I'll go to Saks. And I have yet to see one email from them talking about the times that we're living in, right? I get probably three to four consistent e-blasts from them on a weekly basis, Austin, just selling me stuff, constantly selling me stuff. Even when, you know, the height of COVID, I think they're based in New York City, I'm not sure, and things are shutting down, and New York was shutting down. 20% off on this, 20%. I said, this is interesting. So Saks Fifth Avenue has no social conscience, social awareness as to what's going on. And I haven't bought anything from Saks Fifth Avenue since March.
Because it feels like they're kind of sticking their fingers in their ears and wanting to act like it's business as usual.
And they don't care about me. I mean, they're not caring about how I'm feeling, what my family's going through, just nothing. Just buy. And I think those types of companies are going to lose right now if they're not paying attention to customer sentiment.
Now, I have seen criticism of some companies maybe being too sentimental, where you used to never make a stand on social justice issues, and now you're posting a black square in solidarity. How do we, you know, suss through the companies that are doing a great job and being, you know, holding police brutality and holding folks accountable and bringing racial equity? That's been part of our business since day one. How do we distinguish those people from the, you know, the quote unquote woke businesses who are now all of a sudden excited about racial injustice and preaching against it?
You know, Austin, I think time will tell. You know, there was a wonderful article in Ad Age talking about this right during the George Floyd tragedy. And this particular author called it, you know, virtue signaling versus virtue building, right? And what you just described are a lot of companies virtue signaling, right? Even when we talk about, and I had this conversation with a colleague last week or so, Aunt Jemima, because that's what's on everybody's mind right now. Aunt Jemima said that they're going to change their branding. Do you know how much it costs to actually change the branding of a major, you know, brand like, or, you know, product like that? Millions and millions of dollars. Packaging, just everything. Aunt Jemima said is different from Aunt Jemima did. Or Aunt Jemima's about to put forth X da 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 da. So that's where we have to be careful with the black spots, with Google and Facebook giving their employees Juneteenth off. That's a lot of virtue signaling, right? And what we need, because we've seen virtue signaling. I'm almost sounding like my mother right now because she's seen the ebbs and flows of this, you know, since the 60s and prior to that. We've had, you know, decades and decades of virtue signaling. Now it's time for virtue building. What are you actually going to do? Also, too, there was a wonderful article in the New York Times that talked about this, too, by David Geels, I think. Front page of the New York Times business section talking about corporate America letting down black America. You know, I definitely, you know, refer all your listeners to this article because, again, they talked about the normal way to address social justice issues by corporate America is to give a donation to the NAACP, give a donation to the Urban League, and they're done, right? That's virtue signaling. We need virtue building, and only time is going to tell in terms of how these companies actually walk the walk. Because right now they're talking the talk, and you can quote unquote be woke and talk the talk, but that means nothing, you know, if you're not really walking the walk and doing the work, because the work is hard.
So in the example of Aunt Jemima, they have been signaling virtue by saying we're changing our branding. But if there is still something that's rotten at the core of the business, that eventually will be shown.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and we're going to figure out whether you're actually talking about it or whether you're going to be about it in the way that you treat your employees of color and the initiatives that you support.
And we haven't seen the packaging change. Right? They're changing the branding. We haven't seen the packaging change. So that would be the first step. Let's see the packaging change.
Like, is I think it's so easy right now in particular for there to be a very vocal, quote unquote, call them mob, you know, mm-hmm. an online mob of people who tell you this is racist and needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Trader Joe's went through this a few weeks ago.
Oh,
where
really?
So Trader Joe's has their own imprints of, they might have Asian food or Mexican food, but it's called Trader Jose's
okay.
rather than Trader Joe's.
Okay.
And there was this major online petition started that Trader Joe's is racist and needs to change all their packaging. And they were really thoughtful and came with a thoughtful response that basically said, no, we're not changing that.
Uh-huh.
But then we see the other side. Aunt Jemima, everybody pretty clearly came out and said, hey, this is racist. We don't want this to be here with
right.
the Washington football team, the mm-hmm. Redskins, mm-hmm. formerly known as the Redskins. Mm-hmm. We don't want this here.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to suss out like how many people actually are really, really offended by Aunt Jemima being mm-hmm. on a syrup bottle.
Right, right.
No, it's just I think we're going to look back on this 5 or 10 years from now, and we have seen which of these companies have actually made steps toward racial equity
right.
and which of the ones were really just trying to quell the mob in 2020.
Exactly. And to your point with the Washington, formerly Washington Redskins, I went to Northwestern for undergrad. And so one of my colleagues, Jason Wright, who's African-American, was just named president of the Washington Redskins. So, you know, the Wildcat Nation is, going, you know, rah, rah, rah. That's a great first step. You know, he's the first African-American president of an NFL team ever. You know, we'll see what happens, but, you know, kudos for that hiring.
You are hearing from Dr. Tyra Lindsay Warren. She studies consumer behavior and attitudes at Baylor University in the marketing department. I think that a lot of the social justice stuff, not just race related, that's
mm-hmm.
happening now, to me is a bit of an overcorrection in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
but it's a correction that needed to happen so that we can eventually reach an equilibrium point.
Mm-hmm,
I think
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of people who are just discouraged right now because it feels like there's one side talking and another side talking.
Mm-hmm.
No one's listening.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that this Overton window of the quote unquote acceptable dialogue of the day, that is moving. It's moving even further because we have extreme outliers who are pushing it that
mm-hmm.
way. So even if you don't totally vibe with what they're saying, the fact that it's bringing a conversation like Black Lives Matter to a national head, where it used to just be regional, or there was an event of police brutality and the people in this neighborhood understood and
right.
why people are protesting. Now it's like on a national level, like my parents understand what's going on
uh-huh.
in Minneapolis and in Portland in a way that I think even just a few months ago they wouldn't have.
Well, that's good. And I also think, you know, you have to have some critical literacy, you know, to all of these things that you're viewing. You know, especially, you know, we're at Baylor, Christian mission, things of that nature. If you're living the walk, you know, of a Christian mission, I mean, you should eat and breathe looking at your fellow man with, you know, the same eyes you would want, you know, to be reciprocated. You know, one of my dearest girlfriends used to be the culture critic for the Wall Street Journal in New York. And she calls me up in the middle of this thing. Are you okay, Tyra? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. She said, my black coworkers told me not to call my dear black friends. And I'm like, why? Because she said, you're mad, right, Tyra? And I said, no, I'm not mad. And you're my sister. I mean, why would you not want to call me? We're sisters, you know. She's like, I know, Tyra, but I said, girl, let's do what we do. You know, we love on each other, you know, laugh with each other, all kinds of good stuff. That's what I mean in terms of critical literacy. Don't let all this stuff get you tormented or send you a different direction. If you are loving your fellow man, continue to love your fellow man.
So what are there any tactics of how listeners can be more critically literate when they're hearing about stories that, you know, maybe don't impact them personally?
Mm-hmm. Just open a conversation, you know, start dialoguing and start doing your own research, right? Because so often we are listening so much as to what is coming across Facebook and IG and Twitter. I also teach digital marketing and advertising. So, you know, having critical literacy is something that I'm constantly teaching my students. You know, they're about to go into their no media assignment right now where they have to, for 48 hours, turn off all media in their lives. You know what I mean? And that's what I try to, you know, empower my students to say, as consumers, you have power. You can turn things on and you can turn things off. And sometimes, you know, right now, perhaps we should turn some things off and just start talking to each other. And you'd just be surprised how wonderful your neighbors are, how wonderful your coworkers are, if you just start having a quality conversation.
So is that the idea behind the technology moratorium, is take this time you ordinarily would have been scrolling through Facebook or doom scrolling on Twitter and talk with someone in your neighborhood?
Yeah, and just understand how impactful media is, because on that third day when they have to turn all the media back on in their lives, I, you know, tell them to start counting the advertising, starts counting, you know, and Austin, I get reports back when they have to give the report. I counted 100 ads, you know, that I saw, you know, on that third day. Yeah, it's about just knowing you have power to turn or turn off media, to turn or turn off advertisements, and your life will be okay. You know, you'll still live. But then you can open yourself up for some quality experiences, too.
It seems like 2019, the social media of choice was Twitch. Twitch really became mm-hmm. popular with mm-hmm. streaming. 2020, it's been largely TikTok.
Correct.
What's happening in the social media and the marketing that these companies can do with social media that's interesting to you right now?
You know, the emotional connection, the ways in which they are entertaining, audiences, different types of audiences is pretty interesting. The way that they can move millennials and Gen Z and alpha generation in a way that traditional media just can't figure it out. I mean, they just are continue to just get left behind by these new platforms, if you will. And then at the same time, it's amazing how much we have to be entertained all the time. You know, I'm not going to say good or indifferent, whatever that means. But and again, it goes back to possibly losing quality connections as well, because we're just, you know, my students are on their phone 6, 7, 8, 10 hours a day. And, you know, I get parents who end up sending me emails, thank you, Dr. Lindsay, for that no media assignment. They called me more. And I'm like, oh, you're welcome, Miss So-and-so. But we just have to be careful not to let the platforms and the devices take away from our humanity.
One thing you've brought to Waco is the Waco Family and Faith International Film Festival.
Yes.
It's going to be happening February 4th through 6th, 2021 at the Waco Hippodrome. Tell me how you got involved with this group and what are some of the wonderful events that happen in Waco because of this festival?
Sure. Thank you for mentioning it. I've been producing international film festivals since 2013. I was on the initial producing team for Bishop T.D. Jakes with his international film festival and did 3 film festivals for him. And then in 2018, my team and I got invited to do a 5-day international film festival in Ohio. And last year, when, you know, I am new to Waco and kind of surveying the community, I observed that Black people really don't cross the Brazos that bridge over the Brazos River. Latinos are kind of in this section of town, and then Caucasians are every place else. And I'm just not used to it, Austin. I'm just not used to it. Having lived in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York City, especially for entertainment activities, I'm used to people just coming together, having a good time, laughing together, things of that nature. And my husband and I weren't seeing it. And so often my husband and I were the only African-American couple here, you know, in many activities. And so I said, could I contribute to this? Could I help this? Could I? And I decided, yes. And brought the Waco Family and Faith International Film Festival, which is dedicated to empowering the creative spirit, serving with heart, and celebrating all, with the goal to bring people together, all walks of life, all cultures, all whatever. And we succeeded this year, to my surprise, yet to my just humbleness of just how the Waco community has welcomed this event. We brought in celebrities like Kevin Sorbo, who's known as Mr. Hercules, former Food Network star Gina Neely, and so many more. And we're bringing some fabulous celebrities in 2021. Just to tease you, Gina Davis and her Gina Davis Institute on Gender and Media is coming. There could be a very wonderful talent from American Dancing with the Stars from ABC who might come. And we're also honoring local people like Eric Shepard with Waco Civic Theater. But that's the goal, to kind of just bring people together, celebrate our shared humanity, and, you know, be together laughing, praying, crying, sharing. Because after all the movies, we do have the filmmakers here talking about their movie processes and things of that nature with talkbacks. So, yeah.
The answer to the question, can I do this, is yes. Waco is a place where you can try things, and I'm so excited that you tried this out in Waco. And there's actually a screening coming up on September 11th.
Oh my gosh, yes. Our feature film that won our Grand Jury Prize for Best Feature Film U.S. and International has just received North American distribution rights, and their movie is opening September 11th all across the country. However, Waco and the Waco Family and Faith International Film Festival just happened over the weekend, has been tapped to host their North American movie premiere. And the movie's entitled Be the Light. So the director and the star of the movie will be in Waco on September 11th for this wonderful movie premiere that celebrates community, too. It's a musical, so if you like musicals, you'll love Be the Light. We're doing a VIP meet and greet drive-through, so we're definitely keeping the city's COVID guidelines in mind and front and center. But Tolliver Chapel Mission Baptist Church will feature the director and star, Malcolm Goodwin, from 5 to 6, I believe. And then we go to Greater Zion Missionary Baptist Church for the actual movie screening at 8 o'clock. And we're doing, it's funny, again, you know, we talked about brands and how you have to pivot in COVID. We're trying to, you know, do a socially distanced red carpet drive through, you know, so it's fun, but we're going to work it out. But super excited and honored to support this outstanding movie. And, you know, they can't do anything in California. So they were like, Dr. Tyra, can we do it in Waco? I said, of course.
Another reason to come to Waco.
Yes.
Dr. Tyra Lindsay Warren is the clinical assistant professor of marketing at Baylor University. Thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
Thank you, Austin, for having me. This was lovely. Thank you.
Thanks again to Dr. Tyra Lindsay Warren, Andreas Salumis of Eastside Market, and you for tuning in. Find me on social media at Waco Business News to stay in touch in between episodes, because there is just so much happening in Waco right now. It's really an incredible time to be living in this city. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.